Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
Instead it goes to Bailey!
Welcome, villains, and gather round for the latest episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. It was the familiar sight of a defeat to Manchester United at the weekend as Villa's slump took a further downturn. So we'll be taking stock of that, as well as looking at the injury and contract news from the week. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me this week, it's a warm welcome back to Regan. Hello, Regan. How are you?
Hello. I'm well, despite all of Villa's qualms and queries at the moment. You know, we're still performing probably better than expected in the eyes of most people at the start of the season. Thought maybe we'd be sitting kind of seventh or eighth at this point and battling for the entry into the European places. But, you know, we're still in and among it. And, you know, that makes me a happy supporter.
Yeah, I mean, before we start, I mean, I just thought about that, really, because you're a fair bit younger than myself. I just wondered how this kind of season and this period under Emery kind of rates in your sort of Villa supporting life in terms of where it is from an enjoyment level and also from a point of view of quality, I suppose.
So my kind of start of Villa fandom was the O'Neill era. So we're kind of on par with that, I suppose, in terms of whereabouts we are in the table. I think we've got, mainly because the quality of player has improved dramatically since then, I think we've got a better squad than we had then. We've obviously got a better manager. I think it's more enjoyable to be a Villa fan now than it was then, just because the quality of what is on display is better. We are kind of... O'Neill was a good manager. He was not an elite manager. Emery is an elite manager. And I think, you know, it's... For the vast majority of my supporting lifetime, we've been rather drab. So it was almost like I started supporting during a Premier League high, at least. And then everything went downhill from there. And it's been downhill for, you know, a decade plus. And then we bring in Emery and we're kind of back where my support started in battling against the likes of Manchester City and beating them and things like that. And I think, you know, for a lot of people kind of my age and definitely younger than me, we've perhaps not been able to experience the heroes like McGrath and Townsend and obviously the players that won us the European Cup as well. You know, the likes of Cowens and Mortimer and with. But we now have these modern day heroes. We had Jack Grealish, obviously, that a lot of younger fans will still kind of think of him as that kind of embodiment of Aston Villa, despite the fact that he left us a couple of seasons ago. But we've got these kind of modern day heroes like John McGinn, who is bound to go down in kind of Aston Villa folklore alongside the likes of Juan Pablo Angel and players like that. But yeah, I think it's a good experience at the moment, and it's been a long time since I've been able to kind of sit as an Aston Villa fan and think on our day we can beat anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good way of putting it, isn't it, really? I did kind of feel like that during parts of the O'Neill era. I think felt like we could match anyone, certainly, you know, perhaps at home, but Yeah, I've spoken to Craig about it, and we feel that it's most akin to the Ron Atkinson years, you know, and in that team that was just so good to watch, you know, and it has been like that for most of the season, hasn't it? Particularly at home, and obviously things have taken a slight downturn. And I was thinking about mentioning the O'Neill era. It feels a little bit like the last week or so. I felt a bit like that week under O'Neill, where we were kind of fighting on several different fronts, and by the end of the week it had all kind of gone a bit pear-shaped. I think we got knocked out of the FA Cup, and I think we drew at home to Stoke or something like that, and there was, I mean, it was lost in Europe, and it all went sort of a bit downhill quite quickly, really. And I'm hoping this isn't what happens now, but obviously we've had, after an absolutely remarkable run of form at home over the last few months, we've now lost kind of three home games in a row quite recently. Newcastle, obviously, Chelsea in the FA Cup fourth round replay last week, 3-1, and of course Man United at the weekend. You know, it was an interesting game. The United game, Villa missed what felt like hundreds of chances, and probably dominated the game, and definitely feel like they should have got something out of it. I mean, you know, just briefly, I mean, you know, this was a stark contrast really to the Chelsea game a few days before, where we were really kind of played off the park, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the Chelsea game was, I think I turned it off after about 60 minutes, mainly because of the Lee Dixon commentary on ITV. I think Enzo Fernandez's free kick went in, and I heard, I don't think that's a free kick, but who cares? And I was like, yeah, that's getting turned off. Can't stand to watch any more of that. But I think, you know, like you said, we were played off the park by Chelsea. We midfield looked a bit spineless, and you kind of expected Emery to go away and revitalise his players and kind of, you know, give them a good talking to and say, right, let's make a change to how we play, perhaps the next time we're at home, but we're going to win. And it was one of those games against Man United, wasn't it, where, and they happen, where you dominate, you kind of have a plethora of shots, and for some reason, other than the fact that they've all gone straight at the keeper, for some reason, they just don't go in. And there are plenty of teams that it happens to, you know. You'll have Liverpool games, Arsenal games, Man City games, etc., where they've dominated a game against, and obviously Man United are no Luton or Burnley or Everton, but you'll have those games where you'll play against those teams and they're playing in such a kind of pragmatic way that even though you've had 15 shots and 10 of them are on target, they're just not going in and it's not your day. I don't necessarily think it's a cause for concern. And I think, you know, social media is so good at exacerbating problems into things that perhaps they're not. I don't think that we're in a situation where we perhaps need to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater at the moment. I think it's just a poor run of form, and kind of naturally Villa Park gets a bit tetchy, and it bleeds onto the pitch. And, you know, with things like injuries and players perhaps being a little bit out of form and perhaps not having those areas to be able to rotate in as much, you know, like I said, the crowd gets tetchy and we end up in a position where 5-6 games ago, if we were 1-0 down at home, the Villa Park crowd is kind of roaring the team on. Whereas if we were our next home game down 1-0 after 10 minutes, there'd probably be a bit of that kind of uncertainty, almost like the Robin Olsen in goal uncertainty that you get when Emi Martinez isn't playing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I thought there was certainly a period in the second half when we were chasing the game where the crowd, where it was, you know, one of the noisiest atmospheres I've probably known down there this season, and you know, the crowd were really up for it, and obviously getting the goal and, you know, feeling like we might go on and win it, then it felt like there was only going to be one winner. You know, the amount of chances we were creating, Bailey and Diaby were causing Lindelof all sorts of problems down that side, down the right hand side, and it just looked like it would be a matter of time, really. But Emery made the change. Then he took Leon Bailey off, and we'll talk about Leon Bailey in a bit more detail. But and he brought Tielemans on, and at the time I can remember thinking, well, they're just trying to hold on to what they have now. They want to go back to a more sort of stable midfield and try and see the game out, so at least we don't lose the game and we can still nick a goal here with these players. But it didn't work out like that. Obviously, United managed to sort of really slow the tempo down and keep possession of the ball, and eventually got into a position where, you know, it was a lovely cross, and McTominay got the march on Matty Cash and headed the ball in, and that really took the wind out of the crowd's sails and the players as well. I think it felt like all that effort had kind of gone to waste, and it absolutely had. In terms of that substitution, obviously it's got a little bit of attention. I mean, what do you think about that? Because obviously, I mean, Bailey had a really effective game, and Diaby were looking so dangerous down that side. Do you think just giving that an extra 5 minutes or so would have been a worthwhile exercise?
Yeah, I'd probably think so. I think I can understand why you wouldn't have necessarily the both of them on the pitch at 1-1. I think that's a luxury perhaps we can't afford unless we're playing, you know, a championship side, to have both Bailey and Diaby on. It's almost like putting former winger Bertrand Traoré in Matty Cash's position and hoping that things are going to go okay. I think if you've got two kind of enigmatic wingers, yes, it's great when you're going forward, but at the same time, when you do have to defend, you've got two kind of lightweight forms. You know, they're not the Marko Arnautovic's of the winger world, are they? So I think perhaps, yeah, a couple of minutes, but I think it was probably the right decision. But then again, Bailey's in excellent form. I think Tielemans is a player that's rubbing me the wrong way a little bit. I think Leicester fans were quite vocal about that he wasn't really suited to the Premier League anymore. He's a bit slow. He's a bit rough around the edges. And I'm not seeing anything from Tielemans that makes him anything more than a squad player. And I think I agree with them. I think he's a player that probably will move to a team like Atletico or Sociedad, or a player kind of outside of that kind of top three in Spain, where the football's perhaps a little bit more possession based, a little bit slower, and that will probably suit him. But I put a message in the WhatsApp group chat when we were playing Chelsea, and I said that he runs like he's wading through custard, like he's kind of like a Teletubby, like running up the hill. I called him Teletubby, and that's no kind of reflection on his weight, because he's a professional footballer. He's fit, and he's not kind of, you know, in a position where you might kind of be concerned at how he's looking after himself as a pro. But he's just not that kind of box to box midfielder that you need when he's playing. And I feel like especially when we play him as that kind of second striker role, he doesn't offer enough compared to the likes of McGinn when McGinn's in that role, and McGinn's kind of, you know, running around and harrying defenders and doing those helicopter arms that we've all come to love. Whereas Tielemans' press is a bit lackluster, and it's a bit, as I said, like he's wading through custard when he's trying to get the ball back.
Yeah, he's an interesting one, isn't he? Because I think we're all pretty pleased when we signed him, but he has had a difficult season or 18 months or so at Leicester, and I think that I think whether the system that Emery plays with the four midfielders or the two holding midfielders, the double pivot, really suited him. He feels more like he's an attacking eight, really, with another eight and a six behind him. I think he's more of that type of player, which obviously suited Brendan Rodgers' Leicester team, didn't it? But when I think we saw before Christmas, before he got injured, that he was he had sort of found a bit of a niche on the left hand side of that box midfield, hadn't he? And he was looking quite good. He was looking like he could sort of hold on to that place. But obviously he's got injured and he's gone off the boil again now. And obviously we'll talk about it in a bit. But obviously we're going to probably need him a lot more than we thought we might over the next weeks and months with injuries and so on. But yeah. This game really felt like one that got away. And on the plus side, there's the idea that, you know, that it was a much better performance than the Newcastle game and the Chelsea game. Obviously, the downside is just missing those chances. And we were talking just before we came on about the chance Watkins had right in front of the goalkeeper, and he's just put it down Onana's throat, hasn't he? And it's you know, you need those to go in for your striker, don't you?
And like I said, sometimes you have those games where it's you know you've thrown everything at them and it's just not falling for you. And I'd rather us play well and potentially lose, especially against the likes of, you know, Manchester United, who are kind of perennial top six team, regardless of how poor they look at times. I'd rather us play well and lose than get completely played off the park like we did against Chelsea. And I think that's the case probably for a lot of kind of rational fans, that it doesn't matter as long as there's the passion there and as long as there's the attempt. And, you know, if we're, you know, I don't know the specifics in terms of the stats, but, you know, if we're ahead on possession and we've had more shots and we've had more attempts on target and, you know, we've not looked completely outclassed, I don't have a problem if we lose by a goal. We've tried and it's just not fallen right for us on that day. You know, you play that game another four times and we're probably win it 4 out of 5. And that's not bad when you consider the things that the squad is having to currently deal with, and the kind of limits that Emery has placed upon him in terms of building a match day squad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's certainly a challenge. I thought it was good just to see a bit of that character back in the team, really. And just so disappointing that the finishing really was dreadful and they never really looked in control of it. It was one of those sort of snatchy sort of games, really, where it never quite dropped for anyone other than Watkins and obviously Douglas Luiz when he scored. But even, I mean, he felt like he did his best to miss that as well. But, you know, it was just one of those games where it just, the ball wasn't falling right, and almost the mindset was one of desperation, really. We've got to be sort of getting something from this game, and that, you know, that probably led to their downfall in some ways. I mean, are you at all concerned? Obviously, it's you know, a difficult run at home. Home had been, you know, a real sort of strong fortress for us, hadn't it, for such a long time. Do you think it's, you know, these last three games, do you think they're significant in the overall picture for the rest of the season?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I'm not necessarily putting us in the same boat as Manchester City or Arsenal or any of those teams. I think there is a gap between the kind of the current top three in the Premier League and then kind of the rest of the pack that are chasing Europe, i.e. United, Spurs, us, West Ham. You know, there is a kind of gap between those teams and the league leaders, as you were. But Manchester City lost to us, and then I think they had three or four games within that span where they just couldn't buy a win. And I'm sure you had fans on Twitter with, you know, Rodri as their profile picture, throwing, you know, their hands up and saying, oh, you know, we're playing awfully, blah, blah, blah. What's going on here? And you'll have that now, you know, you'll absolutely have, you know, someone with Emi Buendia or Matty Cash as their profile picture kicking off because, you know, we've not beaten Manchester United at home. We've not beaten Chelsea at home. But it's not, I don't think it's that significant. You know, if we're sitting here in a month's time and we've lost another three or four games, then it's like, okay, we've hit a roadblock in our season and we're probably going to struggle to qualify for the Champions League here. But it's just a blip. And with injuries, yes, it could get worse. But I think, you know, Unai Emery is, and as we've been harping on to anyone that had listened for the last season and a half, is an elite manager. And I'm sure he's had to deal with worse injury crises than what we're currently having to deal with. I'm sure he's had to deal with missing, you know, your best, one of your best centre-backs and perhaps not having a striker and stuff like that. We've still got things going for us in the squad that mean we can still battle, and it provides ample opportunity for people to step up and for new kind of fan favourites to be made.
Yeah, well, this is true, isn't it? You know, teams have to develop, and one of the ways they do develop is by having players missing and other players getting their opportunity. And of course, you know, there's going to be a few players that are going to get opportunities double quick over the next few weeks. I was going to ask you about how Unai Emery might, you know, try and arrest this mini slump. But I think we need to talk about that perhaps in the context of some of the news we've had over the last few days with you know, major injuries being announced. The biggest of which, of course, is Boubacar Kamara, who is the latest very long-term injury, having sustained a significant knee ligament injury during the game against Man United. Obviously, there are also question marks around Ezri Konsa. Some rumours that the initial projections of a four-week layoff may have been somewhat optimistic, and he's due for a longer spell on the sidelines as well. And this, of course, as we know, it adds to the already sort of the ACL victims, Tyra Mings and Buendia, from the start of the season, and medium term absentees Jacob Ramsey, Alex Moreno, who are both out for a number of months. Pau Torres has missed the last 2 months effectively, and Luca Dean a few weeks as well. John Duran's out, of course, as well. So, obviously, you know, massive news really to have lost Kamara, who's such an important part of the team, and no one really does what he does in that team. And you know, we don't have another camera, do we, as far as we know? I just wanted to ask you, though, I mean, not much gets made of this Villa's injuries outside of Aston Villa and Villa fan media and so on. And is it, do you think more should be made of it in terms of the national media, or is it really to Emery's credit that it's largely gone unnoticed for so long?
I think it, you know, all credit to Unai Emery. I think, you know, if we sat down for kind of a Sunday evening game of football and had Peter Drury and, you know, Jamie Carragher commentating on something, it probably wouldn't get mentioned very much, the amount of injuries we've had. I don't think since the first couple of weeks I've heard any mention of Buendia or Mings being injured. And yeah, you know, it's credit to the great job that Emery's doing. I think if we were 10th, perhaps more would be made of it, and the media would be saying, oh, Aston Villa are struggling after they've qualified for Europe, but now they've got a huge injury crisis and that's why they're in 10th. But because we're sat, you know, in the kind of European positions, people are just like, well, actually, you know, more praise to Emery, you know. And if we do can kind of continue on this maybe poor run of form, maybe more will be made of it. But, you know, I think Emery absolutely knows what he's doing. And I think, like I said, it's ample opportunity for new heroes to be made and new people to step up. Perhaps we haven't seen the likes of Zaniolo as much as we'd have liked. And I know he's a more attacking-minded player, but we may see, you know, Emery kind of shuffle his deck a little bit, and we may see a change to his kind of 4-2-4-2-2 kind of formation that he likes to operate in. Maybe we'll see some kind of changes there. And I think as well, it's a kind of a showcase as to how important a squad is. I'm sure there would have been mentions when Pau Torres was signed that was Mings done. That's Mings done in a Villa shirt. But imagine, you know, the last couple of weeks while Pau Torres has been out. Thankfully, we've had Longley, but imagine if Mings hadn't been injured. You know, we'd have had Mings in that centre back partnership, and perhaps he would have been there ahead of Pau anyway. But it just goes to show how important that deep squad is. And sometimes, you know, I'm sure people were clamouring for Callum Chambers to go off on loan to West Brom or wherever he was linked to in the Championship. But thank God he's still at the club currently, because he's one of very few senior centre-backs that can currently play a game of football.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's obviously the name I'd missed out from the injury list, because just a couple of hours, perhaps before we're recording this on Wednesday, there was some news from The Athletic that Diego Carlos has potentially injured his hamstring. So that's potentially an injury for a few weeks. But obviously we don't know that. That hasn't necessarily been confirmed yet, but I'm sure it's, you know, is it Jacob Tanswell, the Athletic? Yeah. Villa Athletic writer, so I'm sure if it's come from him, it's pretty accurate. So that would be a major blow, wouldn't it? And that does bring someone like Callum Chambers very much into the picture, and it probably would have brought someone like Josh Feeney from the academy if he hadn't gone out on loan as well, very firmly into the selection picture. So you know, we really are looking very, very weak at the back, aren't we, at the moment? But then I was thinking about it, Regan, as well, that with Pau Torres coming back, we could potentially have three of our four starting back four anyway available for the next game. So it doesn't look too bad when you look at it like that. It's just the kind of the depth behind that, really, isn't it, that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've certainly seen players fill in. You know, it may be that Emery doesn't want to use Callum Chambers or use Kane Kessler-Hayden, although, you know, he has been recalled, so Emery's obviously seen something in him. But we've seen Alan Hutton play half a season at left back, and you know, that didn't go too badly. perhaps it did at times, but you know, yeah. That's not to say Matty Cash is 6 foot, which I found out earlier doing a bit of googling. So he could operate as a centre back, although he has no positional awareness whatsoever. if needs be, and then you've got the potential to play Moreno and Digne on either flank at the back. You've got the option to use Kessler Hayden if you opt for a right back as a centre back kind of thing. But like you said, you know, it's a shame that Feeney has gone out on loan, and the same with Kerr Smith. You know, Feeney's probably ahead of him in the pecking order, but those are two kind of up-and-coming centre-backs at the club. We've seen Kwanzaa at Liverpool kind of stake the claim for Joel Matip's spot while Matip's been injured, and he's kind of come into his own. And I mean, it feels like Liverpool every kind of couple of seasons have this centre-back that comes out and covers for an injured starter, does well for 6 months, and then gets shipped off to somewhere like Preston for the rest of their career. But, you know, it's a good opportunity for the likes of those players. I read an article about Kerr Smith from a Scottish publication, and they were saying that, you know, he left the Scottish leagues as a boy and now he's a man. And I believe he's still only like 17, 18. But he was basically like highlighting how much of an impact Villa's strength and conditioning team have. And he said he's like built now. That he was initially, when he was playing for Dundee, that he was initially played as a fullback because they couldn't figure out where he kind of fit within that back four. And they said, no, he's an absolute out-and-out centre-back. He's a unit. And, you know, we could, if we needed to, use a player of that ilk. You mentioned on WhatsApp, as we were talking earlier, Lamar Bogard. I think, you know, if needs be, blood those players in. We may see the next 6 months, we may see a lot of Tim Irogbunam, or we may see Tielemans in that spot, and then him getting subbed at 60 minutes into the game, and perhaps we're not seeing Tim for a full 90. But it's, as I've said a couple of times, it's about people stepping up, and this is where a career in the Premier League can be kind of made or squandered, when there's these opportunities at your doorstep. And if you take them, you know, you're flying. If you don't, then, like I said, you end up kind of like Liverpool centre-backs and spending the rest of your career at Preston.
Yeah, absolutely. It is sometimes sink or swim, isn't it, for these players? And I'm sure Emery would only use players that he thought would be able to cope with that. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I know from listening to various people, reporters and so on, Greg Evans and people like that, that you know, Emery does include a lot of academy players in first team training, you know, it's obviously important that they are well drilled and well aware of the system and the style of play, so they can step in if needs be, I guess. And who knows who we might see if Diego Carlos is absent for a while. Of course, Callum Chambers would probably be the main man, or even just sort of switching Longley across to the right hand side. And of course, there's the lesser spotted Courtney House as well, who knows, he may be called on. He's certainly a good player, and he's certainly played that right hand side in the Premier League before, hasn't he?
With the look of our centre backs, I think Courtney Hawes would probably play about 10 minutes before his knees disintegrated. Although I am a big fan of Courtney, you know, there was that period, perhaps, I think it was towards the end of the Dean Smith tenure, where anything that was kind of coming towards the filler final third, it was getting headed straight back towards the halfway line. And I think he picked up a lot of fans during that period of time. And it's a shame that his Villa career is kind of withered out a little bit. If he's registered, I'm all for it. And if he can manage, you know, a full 90, go for it. But like I said, I think we might see no knees by the end of a full 90, judging by some of the stuff that we've been reading over the past year or so.
Well, even just to have sort of warm bodies on the bench, really, isn't it? It's you know, these things need to be considered, and Emery isn't averse to this. We saw, you know, he brought Bertrand Traoré back in to help the squad last winter, didn't he? And Traoré had a really good impact in a couple of games, and it was worth doing in the end. So, you know, who knows? We'll just have to see and see how it all shakes out, really. But Camara is a huge loss, added to Mings and Buendia, obviously, and Konsa. Let's just hope that, you know, any rumours about a longer layoff for him aren't true, and he's back before too long. We'll just have to wait and see about that. But it's certainly put a bit of a kibosh on the optimism for what the second half of the season might have in store for us. But on to more positive news, really, from this week. It was confirmed on Monday that Leon Bailey has signed a contract extension, I believe 3.5 years with an option for an extra year. He's had a fantastic impact this season. He's really, really come on under Emery. 10 goals and 9 assists in all competitions. And it really is an incredible turnaround, because I think most of us expected him to play a bit part role after we signed Moussa Diaby for a record transfer fee. But he's been on fire, hasn't he, this season? And he's both exciting to watch and effective in his output. I mean, what do you think of this? Are you pleased to see this contract extension? And how do you see him now? Do you feel like he's a main man in the team? And do you think Emery could get a similar tune out of Diaby by the end of the season?
So I think, you know, it's what we've come to expect from Bailey, or what we perhaps initially expected from Bailey. I think, you know, his first maybe season or two as a Villa player weren't great by any stretch of the imagination. It may be that he's been playing for this contract almost. He's been playing for his future at the club. But, you know, he's managed it, and I'm happy with his performances. And it goes to show that you do need two players for each position, because if we'd have stuck with Diaby for, you know, a prolonged period of time, he's been kind of out of form for some time. And I think we'd have been in a much worse position if we didn't have Leon Bailey. I'm happy with, you know, his performances this season. Absolutely, he's been arguably our best player, behind perhaps Douglas Luiz and Konsa pre-injury. But I think he offers something that he didn't offer a year or two ago. And, you know, you mentioned Bertrand Traoré, and I think he's probably perhaps a little bit hard done by in the fact that we've let him go and he's gone to Villarreal, because he had that impact 6 months ago. Yes, he's not great in terms of his injury record, but, you know, Bailey's performances, and then having, you know, your record signing as a player to come off the bench, it means that as a kind of right-sided, left-footed attacker, you're third in line, and, you know, it probably makes more sense to go. I think, you know, the only thing that does worry me about the Bailey deal is, and, you know, it's probably not the first time we've discussed stuff about like this on the podcast, is his adopted father, Craig Butler, was speaking on a kind of Reggae Boys podcast. So looking at all the Jamaican players across, you know, Europe's top five leagues and so forth. And he's being interviewed by the presenter, and Craig Butler says, yeah, it's a really nice deal for Leon. It makes him one of the, you know, top paid players at the club. Fine, he deserves that. But then he mentioned, and should a big club come along, everything is in place for that. So I believe by a big club, he means the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, those kind of teams. But, you know, I would have hoped that battling for a Champions League position, we were kind of past the release clause in players' contracts time, and we'd be able to kind of negotiate a bit better in terms of if Real Madrid did want to come and buy Leon Bailey, which I don't see happening at all. If that did happen, that we'd be able to turn around and say, we want this much, rather than the fact that Craig Butler's been able to say, well, if Real Madrid come on offer 60 million, he can go, can't he? And we've gone, yep.
No, I think I imagine it, and a lot of players will have you know, things in their contract where they, you know, they stipulate that they want to know about interest in them. And but I think these days the players, through their agents, they know about the interest before the clubs do sometimes. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm sure, you know, these things will happen. And if he has got a release clause, it will be, yeah, it will probably be doable, but it'll also be a nice sum for Aston Villa as well. And, you know, the fact that he has signed the contract, I think, you know, more than anything suggests that he is happy at Aston Villa. He's obviously enjoying his football. And I'll go back to an article I wrote for the website in the summer about Leon Bailey, where I sort of questioned whether he would choose to go kind of for the easy life in Saudi or in another European league and get a big move and all that and start again, or whether he'd take the opportunity to work with one of the world's best coaches and take advantage of that and take his game onto another level. And he's chosen the latter option, hasn't he? And he's absolutely flying. He looks every inch, you know, a top class Premier League winger now. There's no question about it. He's got the fullback on toast every week, you know, and he's scoring goals. He's creating goals. He's incredibly dangerous. And when him and Diaby do play together, you know, they really do look incredibly threatening. You know, it's about sort of getting someone on the end of that threat now and making sure the ball ends up in the net more often. But, you know, Leon Bailey has just exceeded all my expectations. Although it's funny, really, because we knew he had it in him. Like from his first couple of games at Villa, we knew he had this level in him, and he's really come to the fore, and he's, you know, he really looks a danger. And I wonder whether, you talk about Real Madrid and so on, but I wonder whether at some point Liverpool would be looking at someone like Bailey as a salary replacement, even, you know, someone with that potential for the output to score and create goals, to play on that side and cut inside. He might be on the list for a club like that.
Yeah, especially if the likes of, you know, like Nagelsmann or someone of that ilk kind of takes over from Klopp, you know, managers that are perhaps more well-versed with the Bundesliga, then, yeah, absolutely, they'll be well-versed with Leon Bailey. And, you know, new managers bring new targets for clubs, don't they? So you're absolutely right. It could be something that we see, or some kind of interest that we see picking up. But yeah, I think it goes to show what confidence can do for a player, doesn't it? You know, he spent kind of two seasons where he was useful, but also very often useless. And now, like, unless he's carrying a knock or something, he's pretty much undroppable. And I think Jadon Philogene's decision to go and sit regular football at Hull is looking like a really good one at the moment, because he'd have probably struggled to get game time unless he was kind of playing as that that kind of left-sided midfielder. But yeah, like I said, I think he probably made the right decision currently.
Yeah, currently, although I'd be pretty keen to see Philogene back at the club if we can do that, if we have got that option to bring him back, because certainly that Rabona goal, which was credited to him, I think it's taken a couple of deflections, hasn't it, actually? But what an incredible bit of skill that was. sent Twitter into raptures when that was shown last night. It was a great bit of skill, and he's having a really good season. I think he's certainly one of the top performers in the Championship, and you know, I'm sure they're looking at him, because the last thing you want is to lose a player like that and for him to go to another Premier League club and make us look silly. So, you know, hopefully the plan is to bring him back after a successful season or two, away from the club. Let's see. But yeah, at the moment we've got he probably would struggle to get too many games at Villa. But anyway, I mean, we're looking ahead now. Emery will be tasked with dealing with the problems that he has, the injuries, but also hopefully he'll feel a little bit encouraged by the general performance against Man United last week, and they have the opportunity to put it all behind them a little bit in West London on Saturday. Although Craven Cottage, not traditionally a great place for us to go. Marco Silva's team have been nothing if not consistent inconsistent this season, sitting 12th in the league now, having just actually beaten Bournemouth 3-1 at home last week, which is a good win for them. There'll obviously be a lot of talk this week about how Villa might set up now to cover the losses of particularly Konsa and Kamara. And hopefully Emery will be able to kind of call on Pau Torres and Luca Dean as well after injury, and maybe bring Tim Iwobunam more into the mix. How do you see this happening? How do you see Villa lining up? What do you expect to see initially in terms of the team selection and the way they set up?
So I think we'll see two left-sided centre-backs playing next to each other. I think we'll have Pau and Longley next to each other. And I think we'll see Tielemans sitting in that Kamara role. And I think that's probably where he's played his best football for Villa this season, albeit I think he's predominantly played that role in Europe. But I think he'll be there for at least the first hour, and I think it'll kind of be the opportunity for Emery to see whether it's worthwhile. If it doesn't work, I think the game following that we might see Tim kind of be able to stake a claim for that position. I mean, we've seen McGinn in that role and it doesn't really work that well. There aren't any other players that I could think would be able to sit there. There's probably a list of four that would be able to do the Kamara role, and that's Tielemans, Iwobunam, McGinn and Chambers. I think Chambers has probably lost too much pace since the fact that he played DM at Fulham. So scratch that one off. McGinn's too important elsewhere on the pitch, so scratch that one off. Tielemans and Iwobunam are going to be battling it out for that for the next 6 months. And it'll probably fall to Tim, I would think. I think we'll probably see Moreno start, and they'll change for Dean at some point in the second half. I expect to see Bailey starting, and I think maybe we might get a surprise in Matty Cash not starting. Maybe he might give Kane his Premier League debut. I think, is his Premier League debut, or has he come on as a sub? I can't remember, but
no, I'm not sure.
I think it might be his debut, and if not, it'll be his full debut. But I think that'll be the only surprise. Maybe I've not been too impressed with Cash, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him dropped. And I think if Konsa was fit, he'd play two left-sided centre-backs and Konsa at right-back.
Yeah, I think the problem is, I think when these sort of things happen and you're in a bad run of form, I think managers naturally gravitate towards the experience, don't they? And that's why I think McGinn will probably drop into the midfield too. just for that purpose, really. But you're absolutely right. I think you lose an awful lot in terms of the press if you play McGinn further back, and I'm not sure, you know, even play, obviously Tielemans can play further forward, Ramsey, Anirudh Boonham can do those roles, but whether they do them with the same effectiveness as John McGinn, and certainly, you know, Diaby won't necessarily press in the same way that McGinn does on from the right hand side either. So I think it's a big call, really, but I think it's really about saying this is it now. We don't have a choice. We have to just hang our hats on something and go for it, really, and make the best of it. And I think that's potentially what we'll see. I'd certainly feel more confident about McGinn playing that role than Tielemans. But if that means Tielemans takes one of the other midfield positions, then that's fine too, really. We'll just have to see. In terms of cash, I agree. I just think he looks a bit bereft of confidence at the moment. But again, I think it'll come down to picking the experienced players at the moment, particularly in the defence, and he won't want to sort of hang a young player out to dry whilst he's bedding in a new centre back partnership, possibly. But
yeah,
you know, we'll just have to see. I would always pick Luca Dean now. I just think he's nailed down that first choice left back position. But again, you know, the option maybe comes to play Moreno further forward in a more attacking position on the left-hand side. So there's...
even or play with two full-backs, kind of, you know, Moreno right side, Digne left side, or vice versa. And yeah, that's potentially how you drop cash out of the lineup.
Yeah, possibly. Or, you know, or like I say, Dean and Moreno down that left side. But I think, you know, that... even with these injury problems, I think we'll find that Emery will still see the options available to him, and he won't think in a really kind of structured way. He will consider things outside the box. He will know everything about the player's strengths and weaknesses, and I'm convinced he'll be thinking of things he can try in order to make sure he gets the most effectiveness out of those players, you know. But it might be a bit of trial and error initially.
I'd like to see a bit more of Zaniolo. I think we've not seen enough of him this season, and I don't know whether that's just like the fanboy in me that wrote the article in August, kind of, you know, naming him as Rome's prodigal son. But, you know, I can quite easily see, like, you know, Ramsey playing off the left, Bailey off the right, McGinn dropping into that sitting and holding position, and then perhaps Watkins and Zaniolo up front together. I think the one thing that doesn't kind of fall right for Zaniolo is that he's too desperate to make an impact, and at times he'll try too hard or he'll go it alone when that's not really the Emery way. But I'd like to see him, and I believe he can make an impact in these last couple of months. So perhaps that might be another name that we see kind of dropped into the lineup.
Yeah. And also, of course, we've got the new signing, haven't we? Morgan Rodgers, who will be looking to make an impact at some stage as well. So you look round, and when you talk it through, you think actually there might be some scope, and it might not be the terminal kind of end to our season that you know, prematurely kind of snuffs out the Champions League hopes. Let's hope not, and let's hope, obviously, having the Emery factor, the mastermind coach will help. And you know, we never envisaged that he'd be able to do what he did last season with that group of players. So he's just in the same boat again now, isn't he? And he's just got to go with it, really. So you know, let's see. It might be more interesting and exciting to watch. So we'll see how it goes. What about a prediction for Saturday against Fulham then?
I'm going to say 2-1. I'm going to say we're going to concede first, but we'll equalise shortly after, and then we'll get one in the second half. I think we'll win. I can't see us losing. And you know, I think to kind of just hang on to the squad looking perhaps not as bad as we presumed initially. I think, you know, regardless of what happens in these last kind of couple of months, you can always look forward to the start of next season, where we'll have the likes of Buendia, Mings, Kamara returning, and we'll have, you know, this excellent full squad with hopefully no more ACL issues in them. And we'll be ready to push on for Champions League next year if it doesn't happen this year.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. That's certainly a positive viewpoint to end the podcast on. I'm going to go for a regulation 2-0, although I think that might be optimistic, I think, in terms of conceding or keeping a clean sheet. But, you know, let's see. Away from home might be the answer for us this, you know, and going back to basics a little bit and putting a few of those solid away performances like we did at the back end of last season. That might be how we do it now. But we'll wait and find out, and it'll be interesting. But it's been great to chat it all through with you today, Regan. Thanks for coming on at short notice as well. We've had a bit of trouble arranging it this week, but thanks for that. Great to talk to you. No worries, and thanks to everyone for listening and continuing to support the podcast and the website. Obviously check out underagaslitlamp.com for any new articles which may appear. Hopefully there'll be some coming, and give us a follow on the socials, and obviously we advertise sort of what's coming from the website and in terms of the podcasts as well. And if you are going to Fulham, get behind the boys, and let's see if we can bring home those 3 points and get the season back on track. But until next week, stay safe and up the Villa.